What is the biggest problem that you're seeing right now with ethics complaints?
Oh, it's the same as always. Communication and diligence. People that just get in over their head, their practices, they're running too many cases, they can't keep up. The biggest lately I have seen, I have a couple of cases where it's communication, but not just the forgetting to respond to the email or the phone call. Like, right, we all know that you need to call your clients back.
Systemic communication problems.
And failing to properly set expectations.
Welcome to Above the Legal Limit. I'm your host, Justin Chopin, business owner, lawyer, dad, world's best husband, traveler, and adventure seeker. On this podcast, we mix business with pleasure. We'll dive into growth strategies, entrepreneurial adventures, the business of law, and prove that business isn't boring. So let's get ready because we are going above the legal limit.
Welcome to Above the Legal Limit. I've got a very special guest today, someone I'm super excited to talk to, Claire Roubillon with Louisiana Legal Ethics LLC. I don't know why I had to read that. I'm very familiar with you and your firm, but for whatever reason, it was too many L's. I had to read it.
La, la, la. Well, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So for anyone who doesn't know, though I suspect they do, Claire is the ethics guru for lawyers. So this is where the buck stops here when we talk about legal ethics. We won't get into specifics. I'm not going to ask you about who you're defending right now and all the juicy cases. I'm not going to do that. Or any of the things you've helped us with. But you could probably do that. Hey, it's hard being a plaintiff's lawyer. It's tough. So I absolutely have you and your partner on speed dial because I never know. Like, people ask me questions or situations come up, and I'm thinking, I want to make sure that I do the most right thing here, but maybe I'm not 100% sure on what that is because of a very, very squirrely written rule.
Well, and a lot of the rules are gray.
Yes.
And there's a lot of gray space in a lot of those rules. So that's where we come in. It's that risk management, being ahead of the game, being ahead of the issue before it comes up, giving yourself time to anticipate which way you've got to pivot and how that's going to impact your case and your client. So I serve as that sounding board. I think I'm right about this, but I just want to double check, or I have no idea, but I know that I'm toeing the line. So give me some direction here.
Or sometimes, you know, so I always say this, and it's true. Like the first day as a plaintiff's lawyer, I encountered all sorts of bizarre situations. I was a defense lawyer for 10 years. In the defense practice, very rarely are you talking about ethics, unless maybe you're defending a plaintiff's lawyer, or some defense lawyers. It used to be defense lawyers never got in trouble. You're starting to see a few here and there.
I find the defense lawyer cases that we get, they're more lawyer on lawyer disputes.
Correct.
Whereas the plaintiff's bar, it's going to be a client case usually.
Right, and so we. So day one, you know, I printed out the rules of professional conduct. And so the firm's 10 years old now, basically. And so only until recently, I think it was like an old dusty copy. And I was like, you know, I don't even know if these are even been updated since then. So I threw away my old dusty rules.
Well, I'm going to come bring you a book. I'll mail it this afternoon.
Oh, like a real one?
Yes.
I just printed mine online.
No, we have a real book.
You have a real book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with annotations, everything.
Man, we don't buy the real books around here. Those things are expensive.
Oh, well, I'll send you one for free. They're all online too. Right. That's probably where you printed them from. They have the annotations
online,
on there. Yeah.
You know, in the year 2015, I went online, I printed it out, and I kept it there. Because you do need to reference it all the time. Specifically, you know, like advertising rules, of course, like I'm always pouring through. Or like rules on consent to associate, you know, where as a defense lawyer, that you would never encounter
a lot of those needs.
Associations like this. But
I didn't even know a lot of those rules were out there before I started doing this. So when I got out of law school, I started in criminal defense. So I worked at the public defender's office. And those clients just show up in a folder on your desk. I didn't have to go get clients. So I had no idea, for example, that advertising rules governed lawyer conduct. No idea. But now I do it. I live and breathe it.
Right.
And if you haven't done that before, you can very easily step in a minefield.
Look, I was driving down the road. It's going to be purposely generic here. I was driving down the road and a good buddy of mine has a beautiful billboard. I think it's actually just the best. And it's gone now. And I looked at it and my heart sank because I was like, oh no, that does not comply with the rules of professional conduct. And I immediately called him up. I was like, hey buddy, I don't want to be, it's already been printed. I don't know. I know that's probably like a $2,000 print job, but you know, and he was like, ugh. He was like, well, hey, I appreciate you letting me know. You know, some lawyers would have just reported me to the bar instead of calling me up. It's tricky. I was like, and you know what? And as soon as I told him, he knew exactly what happened. It was like a new person sent it to the bar for approval, but forgot to put, you know, something on it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's not the lawyer that, because look, if you're a lawyer, you're probably just like me and you, I want more time, right? You never have enough time to do right. your job, your legal work. So do you always have enough time to do your marketing? No, there's some stuff that you outsource out. So whether you outsource that to a third-party vendor that's going to run your marketing, or you outsource it out to the paralegal or the secretary at your office, if the lawyers don't know the advertising rules, those people especially don't know the advertising rules. Right. So you've got to get that extra set of eyes, that person that's going to check.
And it's a moving target, too. So specifically, I'm thinking of, so we have a new TV campaign that's out. So mm-hmm. if you're, you know, you live in Lafayette, but if you're in the Greater New Orleans area and you're watching TV, you would be like, you should go buy a lottery ticket, right? Because we're not on that much. But like there's, if you happen to be in the 15 seconds that we're on, you'll see it. And so I had to get all those approved. And I was getting some other stuff approved, and the bar, who has to pre-approve it, they clapped back and they were like, no. The font on this is not right. And I went back and looked, and I was like, well, that's the same font in all the other ads that we have out there that were approved ages ago. But then you're like, well, I don't want to say that, because then they're going to make me reprint everything. And, you know, this stuff ain't free, right?
I mean, right.
And you know, for our buses, right? So we have 35 buses.
Those are expensive.
You know, it adds up, right? Yeah. So if I got to reprint 35 buses.
I have never seen a complaint pursued on the size of the font.
I have.
Well, because you got to remember, right? The person who's screening your ads for compliance, that's the LSBA. That's
right.
Different than the ODC. The ODC is who would investigate and prosecute for violations of the rules. So just because the LSBA sends you a non-compliance letter does not automatically mean the ODC is going to open a complaint. Sometimes they do.
Fair enough.
There's a process in between.
Okay. So, interesting. So, all right. Well, my question then is, What is right now, what's hot? Like, what is the biggest problem that you're seeing right now with ethics complaints?
Oh, it's the same as always.
It's always
communication and diligence. People that just get in over their head, their practices, they're running too many cases, they can't keep up. The biggest lately I have seen, I have a couple of cases where it's communication, but not just the forgetting to respond to the email or the phone call. Like, right, we all know that you need to call your clients back.
Systemic. Communication problems.
And failing to properly set expectations.
Yeah.
So failing to properly prep the client for how the process is going to go, what the expectations for the end result are going to be. So if your client doesn't have those expectations set and the communication is not there throughout, you're going to get a pissed off client.
Yeah.
And pissed off clients are not who you want filing complaints.
No,
because even if, you know, and this is what I tell my clients, like, we want to do it right. We want to do it right from the start so that when you, because you can't control always if you're going to get a complaint or not. You can do everything right and just have a client that's a jerk. You want to be able to, if that happens and you get that envelope, know, though, that you have done everything right and it's going to get closed. So you don't have that stress weighing on you.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, look, communication with clients is challenging. We have... this is one of those times too, where if you don't live in this space, you may not realize it. So defense lawyers, and I could say this cause I can talk shit about defense lawyers because I was a defense lawyer. So I'm like one of them, right? I'm like cops talking about other cops. Or my father, you know, who recently retired supposedly, but
he's a lawyer.
Yeah. So he's defense lawyer for 50 years, 50 plus years. You know, he would always be like, well, you need to document this in an email to the client. I was like, you know, what makes you think that this client has an email address, is communicating with us via email, remembers the password for their email, right? So we learned these challenges very early on in communicating with clients. And now this is hardly novel, but when I implemented this back in 2016, it was really novel. It was like I'll actually tell you where it came from. I was driving down the road and Morris Bart had a billboard that said, you know, you could call or text us. And I was like, holy shit, I can text Morris Bart. And so that day I pulled in the office and I like set Google ablaze. Like I went into a deep dive on this and we invested in software called, at that time it's called ZipWhip, which was like publicly traded and it was a major operation on Times Square, and it was the single cheapest piece of software I've ever purchased for the law firm. I think we paid like $20 a month.
Oh, wow.
And it would allow us to use our vanity number, 500, 8,000, and we could text with our clients. And
that's amazing.
It completely changed the practice of law at the Chopin Law Firm.
So it didn't go through your cell phone? It just went through the computer?
No.
Yeah, because that is really hard. And I think that's a challenge that lawyers face, is where does the work-life balance line?
Well,
I
mean, it destroys it.
Is there one?
It destroys it. So I'll tell you, so ZipWhip got bought out by Twilio. We don't have ZipWhip anymore. But now we got what's called text request. It's all the same. And it ain't $20 a month anymore either. Not for us.
Those were the good old days.
Right,
yeah, those
good
are
old
long
days.
Gone.
It's actually still pretty cheap. You know, I think we still pay, $35 a month, mm-hmm. and I did an audit last month on how many texts we send and receive, and it's something insane, like 10,000, right?
Wow.
But it's on my cell phone. And so what I tell clients, you know, because it's app-based, it's web-based, I have it on my computer, I have it on my cell phone. Every lawyer here has it on their cell phone. Every staff member here has it up on their computer screen. And so clients all day long will text me about their case, wanting an update, sending us information. Now, this is, like I said,
they all have a phone.
2017
you know?
Was super novel.
Yeah, they don't all have email, maybe.
2025, this is standard, mm-hmm. right? I'm sure I would be shocked to find a plaintiff's firm that doesn't have this capability.
And when we're talking about texting, I teach a lot about texting and I don't know what else to call it besides texting hygiene. That sounds weird, but how
a great thing to call it.
Because
I know
communicate
exactly
with
what
your clients.
Right.
And so this is a silly example, but I asked this when I did my CLEs in December, how many kissy faces is too many kissy faces to send to a client?
One.
Well, okay. So, but I noticed myself the other day, I had a client that's a lawyer emailing me, and my Microsoft Outlook, like, you can send a reaction,
right.
and I almost clicked the heart, and I'm like, oh God.
Right.
So texting, it's great. And there are certain things that you should text your clients about.
This will confirm our conversation 5 minutes ago where you gave me authority to settle your case.
Yes,
please
but
respond.
Don't
yes.
text back and forth with the client getting the initial settlement authority, right? You're going to want to have that conversation on the phone with your client, or in person would be better. Confirm it in writing, yes, but don't get that exchange back and forth through the text messaging.
Yeah, well, so what I love about it is we can download the entire thread and mm-hmm. I can upload it to the file. And I have it for, you know, prosperity. So, this completely destroyed work-life balance. Yeah. When I started practicing law, I don't know when you started, but I'm assuming.
How old are you?
45.
Okay, I'm 36. So you're,
okay.
yeah, 10 years.
So
I started in 2014.
When I first started, the iPhone wasn't out yet.
Oh, you had a BlackBerry?
We had the BlackBerry.
With the mouse, you know, the circle.
Mouse. Yeah, you used to get, you know, like rollerball thumb.
Yeah, and now it's
now it's
the swipe scrolling thumb.
But
yeah.
If you're old enough, you'll have the carpal tunnel in both spots of the thumb. And your boss might send you an email in the middle of the night or something like that. But it was like really, you know, you didn't roll out of bed and pick up your BlackBerry quite like you do your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would, you know, you'd leisurely come into the office, maybe you would chit chat with people in the elevator, and you would come in and you'd sit down and start your day. That's gone, right? So what I tell my clients is, listen, because the funny thing about the texting is, like, texting during the day, look, we have 1,000 clients we're servicing at any given time. We have 10 lawyers here. If I have 1,000 clients call at one time, it is physically impossible, even with all hands on deck, for me to address all these needs. So I said, but look, so that is where people get into trouble. And they get overloaded and they become phone phobic. No one wants to talk on the phone. They avoid the hard conversations. That's really one of the reasons I think they avoid it. But I was like, what I always tell my clients is, like, look, if you call me mm-hmm. on Sunday at 3:00, okay, the gatekeepers are never going to let you through. I mean, you would have to use the magic words. You would have to be like, I was just rear-ended by an 18-wheeler, and I want to speak to Justin Chopin. Otherwise.
I am available.
Otherwise, right. Like, you're never going to get through, right? I got a warehouse somewhere. I think right now the warehouse is up in New York, and they're the gatekeepers. We used to have a warehouse out in Portland. We used to have a company out of Portland, and then during COVID, they lost all their workforce. So we hired a different company, right? Because I'm not here answering the phones on Sunday. You know, because I'm doing the same thing you're doing. Like, I'm watching the Saints lose at 3:00 on Sunday. So you call me, I'm not going to answer, right? And no one's going to put you through. But you can text me. And if you text me, I will see it. And so my phone, yeah, you know, middle of the night, we'll see. You know, I always have to laugh, you know, midnight.
That's when you get text. The weird questions. Yeah.
And look, I'm not responding to anyone at midnight. You know, I'm asleep.
But why are you checking your work texts at midnight?
Well, I'll see them come through, right? In the morning, like, so it'll come up, you know, like all your, you know, notifications yeah. and stuff like that. And so this is the new world we live in. It's not going away. We're never going to get our time back.
But you need to guard it. You need to guard it very carefully because it's that mismanagement of time on a variety of things is where you run into trouble. You know, you mismanage your work time that flows into your personal life. How do you start coping with your struggles in your personal life? Oh, well, you start drinking too much. You start gambling. I mean, it can cause problems that then bleed back over.
Which then gets you reported to the bar. Oh, and that is something else. So what's worse, getting reported to the bar for poor communication with a client or owing gambling debt or a DUI? I guess you could become an alcoholic and not get a DUI, I suppose.
There are some cases where you got all three of those problems in one. They're going to be all three different cases.
I scour the reports as they come through. So you guys send me one, mm-hmm. right? Louisiana Legal Ethics.
Yeah,
Louisiana Legal Ethics.
Newsletter. If you check on our blog, we do blog posts. So I just did one about a big risk management for your end of the year checklist, your beginning of the year checklist. You got to check the stats from the LADB for 2024 discipline. So someone like me that like lives and breathes this, I like anxiously await to find out how many people were suspended, how many people were permanently disbarred, what violations. So I ran a big analysis of it and kind of saw the trends in the last year. So for me, that's fascinating.
I like it. I think it's interesting. I think it's important. You know, I read the LADB when it mm-hmm. comes through. I also will pull, you know, the Louisiana Supreme Court will send me, it's not a daily email.
Tuesdays usually.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's Tuesdays.
I've never had enough presence of mind to identify when they come. I just know that they come. And sometimes come like back to back and you get like, you know.
And you'll sometimes get them on a Friday, but usually it's right. Tuesdays around lunchtime.
And I don't read it. What I do is I scroll for NRA, mm-hmm. and then I find one and that's like code for lawyer getting, you know.
Or judge. Yeah. So you got to think when they're at the Supreme Court level, if it's just a consent, it will have gone, a consent would be equivalent to like a plea in criminal court. Uh-huh. So if you do a consent with the ODC, it'll go straight to the court and the court will issue, you know, a acceptance or a denial of the consent. But if you are a lawyer or a judge who goes all the way through the process, you'll have a hearing committee report right. and an appeal opinion, for lack of a better word, that details much more often than the Louisiana Supreme Court opinion will.
Okay, so I don't know that I read the appellate opinions. I'll usually read the Supreme Court opinions.
So they don't circulate those. We cover them on our blog. We do a This Month in Discipline that covers all the Louisiana Supreme Court, hearing committee, and LADB cases as they move through that process. But they're also on the LADB website.
I think it's fascinating. One of the trends that I think is, I have two trends that kind of give me heartburn. One is the Spanish Inquisition, I'm going to call it. You know what? It's okay. Like, they're tough. They have. If you're going to be in this business, you got to have thick skin. So you don't be offended. The DUIs, suspending lawyers for getting a DUI.
We'll drill down in a second on that. But okay, yeah. So that's trend one.
Trend two is you're no longer. It's not just that you were unethical. It's that you made a mistake, and your mistake, what we would just call malpractice. Right, and said, if you do this long enough, you will make a mistake. Like mm-hmm. I said at the end of the hurricane season, we filed so many hurricane suits. I was like, it's going to be a miracle if we don't make one mistake here. It was, so much anxiety. We had spreadsheets we were going through. We were, you know, double checking. And we actually did. We actually made a mistake, but we were able to correct it. You know, we looked at it and we're like, no, refile, wrong parish, right? So, but you're not allowed to make a mistake. Because the malpractice is incompetence, which is unethical.
Well, we'll talk about that. Which one you want to tackle first?
Let's talk about the DUIs because it's more interesting.
Okay.
And as this is above the legal limit, and we're not drinking on this episode, but you know it is. I guess it bears mentioning.
Okay, so the first thing when I'm thinking about the rules of professional conduct, you're calling them the ethics rules, right? I call them the discipline rules because just just because you get a DWI or just because you run an advertisement with the font too small, it doesn't mean you're unethical. It means that you violated a rule and you're going to be disciplined. Okay?
Okay, fair enough.
So with the DWIs, you're going to see your lawyer discipline case split into, well, I guess there's really three routes it can take. So first is the ODC never finds out about it, right? So there is not a mandatory reporting of yourself. So if you yourself get in trouble, you don't have to call the ODC and tell on yourself. The rule's directed to another lawyer's conduct. But, you know, oftentimes we get the calls and it's like, oh, it's Monday morning. I just got out of jail. I got a DWI. What's going to happen? Sometimes we still advise to self-report because that may be the best thing. So if the ODC gets informed of it, they're going to recommend that you do JLAP. Even if the ODC doesn't find out, we may recommend that you do a JLAP evaluation.
JLAP for,
so judges
for
and lawyers lay assistance people. Program.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
So your DWI, what happens ultimately in your DWI lawyer discipline case will very much depend on your JLAP evaluation. So you'll go, depending on like the brief intake JLAP does, they'll have you do a one-day eval, could be a three-day eval, and this evaluator is going to make some recommendations. I have seen a recommendation come back that says this was a one-off experience, the client does not have a substance abuse problem, and ODC closed that file, dismissed, nothing.
Okay.
Closed. I have seen it where the recommendation comes back, you need intensive inpatient, you need an intensive outpatient, you just need to go to AA and sign a JLAP monitoring agreement, which is essentially an agreement where you stay sober and you go to AA, you do the piss test, all those things. And if you comply with, or you know, you remain compliant with your JLAP recommendations, you'll get a deferred suspension, generally. Now, of course, there's outliers to all these things, but generally what you will see is a deferred suspension. So there'll be no interruption in active practice.
Okay.
So then the last category
is no good.
Is a more, much more challenging like case.
You're addicted to drugs.
or you have no interest in giving up the bottle.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what?
I shouldn't make light. Actually, it's very serious. So I also sit on a committee. I sit on the Client Assistance Fund.
Okay.
And so for the lay people, the Client Assistance Fund, like our job is to, you know, as best we can, compensate clients who were defrauded by their attorney.
Right. It doesn't have to be theft or defraud. It
can't
just be like...
Defalcation is the word used in the rule, in our bylaws.
It's not just like they lost the case.
No. Yeah. Right. You know, no. Complete malpractice, isn't it? It's really a defalcation. So it's either you paid them and they didn't do it, mm-hmm. or I paid them and he died. So that's very common, yeah. Right? And so it's not technically a defalcation, but it's like kind of is.
Yeah, but that's a good case to use that
sure,
for.
Sure, right? Yeah. You know, so that's a good one. But what I see is more than 50% of all the cases that would come through my committee are instances of really serious drug abuse. And where they were getting, and so if you get paid on a flat fee, but actually some of these are hourly too.
Yeah, flat fee, it's a problem.
They get the money. Right.
They spend it because they can.
And then they spend it on drugs.
Yeah.
And then they don't do the work. So I think the last one I had, I don't even have to worry about saying the name because I don't even know who it was. But this lawyer showed up to court like, completely coked out. And I guess to his credit told the client, like, man, I can't go argue this. I'm really on a lot of drugs.
Oh, wow.
But it was a criminal proceeding. And so this poor client, like I can't even imagine as a criminal defendant, my lawyer shows up and he's like, man, I haven't slept in 3 days. I'm on so much coke right now. And I don't even think I can walk in that courtroom. And the report is like the guy shows up and it's exactly what you want it to be. It's like Miley Cyrus shows up and it's just like ready for court. So discipline for addiction, you don't get it ahead of time, we don't want to see it at the tail end where this guy went to jail, right?
Yeah.
This guy went to jail.
So I think what it would say is it's not discipline for addiction. Mm-hmm. It's monitoring.
Law.
Well, it's discipline. Yeah. It's discipline for violating a criminal law. And it's monitoring the lawyer or getting the lawyer in a place where the court is comfortable with their fitness to practice.
Yeah.
So, it, like, you'll have a JLAP monitoring agreement before you get back in, and you have to stay compliant with it. Now, JLab does some good work. Now they can be very generous with their recommendations. So, I've got some clients.
What does that mean now? Like generous in a good way or in a bad? You need a lot of inpatient rehab or generous?
Sometimes we're like, I would hear from someone how they are. And I'm like, wow, I would have not thought you needed any help. And JLab is coming back with inpatient treatment. Now there's some people where I'm like, I can just smell you and I'm pretty sure they're going to tell me you need inpatient.
Right.
So sometimes they're very onerous recommendations.
What if the lawyer can't afford that?
That's a problem. Yeah, well.
It's inpatient. Yes. Is not typically covered.
And some lawyers don't have insurance.
Right.
And so that is a problem. I've had that very practical problem in cases before where the lawyer says, I want to go to rehab, right.
It's like a condition of your suspension as you go to rehab. Don't have the money for rehab and it's not insured.
So like the condition would be, we will do a deferred suspension if you comply with JLAP. To comply with JLAP, you have to go to rehab. And the ODC is not going to pay for it.
Right.
Yeah. So there is, I have heard of the ability to get there's maybe some scholarship funding, but I don't think abundant.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice. I didn't know about that.
So, but it can present the problem. You have some people that use that as the excuse of like, well, I just can't go to rehab.
Right.
Well, and that's just confirming what they already wanted anyway. But you've got some other people that say, I would go, but I can't pay for it.
Yeah. Well, I've looked into, not for myself, but for.
Well, tell me more about that.
Yeah. Like I've looked at this and I've looked at this issue on the insurance side where, we had someone come up and they needed inpatient and I was reviewing the insurance and it's just, some policies will cover it and some don't. And most, by the way, actually don't.
Well, and even if you could have
Medicare,
a problem where
I think might.
if they cover a rehab stay, their criteria for what meets a necessary rehab stay could be different than what JLAP.
Yeah. So what happens if JLAP is like, we'll just use round numbers. Like you need 8 weeks of inpatient and then a healthcare provider is like, we don't really think so. We think you just need, 4 weeks.
You can try to get a second opinion.
So you can go back. Okay.
Well, you can try to get a second evaluation and try to get a different recommendation, but then you get sort of into a battle of, it doesn't normally end well if you go that route.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the second one? My, you're no longer allowed to make a mistake rule. And looking at the opinions as they come through, it seems to me, and I want to be corrected if I'm wrong, that maybe it's the treatment's different whether or not you have insurance.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay.
No.
Because, big defense firms, they get sued all the time for malpractice.
So
there's no bar complaints there.
Yeah, well, okay,
right?
So I'm going to correct you.
Yeah, go
so
for
it. So it's not just malpractice because we're all human, right? Even the best of us can make a mistake sometimes.
Sure.
And the rules understand that, the ODC understands that, the court understands that. What happens in a malpractice case is going to be how you handle yourself in the case after the malpractice. Whether you lie about it, whether you conceal it, whether you mislead the client. So it's really a malpractice plus. So if you are a pure malpractice and you do everything right after, you give the client notice,
right.
You tell them in writing, you don't try to settle the claim without giving them the opportunity to get another lawyer. If you do those things right, it should, and I have seen, it be completely closed. It's the malpractice plus the
sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, we're still in discovery. Yes, we got a trial date, and the case was never actually filed.
Yeah,
you missed the prescription deadline.
So we do legal malpractice, too, and so we typically see that. I always feel bad when we make these arguments. I don't always, but a lot of times we'll make the argument. We're actually citing the rules of professional conduct as well as, just general negligence in the way that files.
Certainly,
handled,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
I have to, right? Because I'm representing my client here. But I'm always like, okay, yeah, rule 1.1. I get it. Am I right? It's rule 1.1?
Yeah.
It's like the first one.
Yeah. Right?
It's like the first rule as a lawyer.
Terminology is going to be your first one. The definitions.
Right. Yeah, rule one. Be competent.
Yeah.
Baseline competence. But
which you would, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff people do. It's like, why did you think that was even a decent decision at the time?
Right, right. We've seen where, they blew it right, the case abandons, and then 10 years later, the client's like, hey, whatever happened with my case against that trucking company? And the lawyer's like, oh, that? Man, you don't want to, don't worry about that case.
But don't you also wonder about that client, too? It's like, where were you in the last 10 years?
10 years?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with the malpractice plus cases, that's what I call them, you're going to see the malpractice happens, and then the lawyer lies about it or misleads the client as to, you know, the status of the case. Sure. Those times you're going to see...
That's where the problem comes in.
Now, when insurance comes into play, is always helpful in your discipline case to show all evidence of, you know, mitigation and remedial measures. So if you're able to compensate the client for whatever harm, that goes a long way.
And, I mean, look, it happens. I get it. You know.
Certainly, certainly. I think, you know, there are so many steps that you can take. You know, when I think of the rules, I kind of think of them two categories. Like, there are things like advertising. In my opinion, there's no reason to have advertising violations because you can get ahead of that. You can plan ahead and make sure that you're compliant. You're in court. You're having to act immediately in a deposition. Things sometimes happen fast in that second category of cases. Those are harder.
Right.
Those are cases where you really need to be able to think quickly and know the rules so that you're making the right decisions when you don't have time to plan.
And a lot of times I find it's a result, at least on the malpractice side, not really referring to the ethics side, but on the malpractice side, sometimes it's a result of a very draconian rule, right? And so we have one case right now where the defendant slash plaintiff's lawyer filed in the wrong jurisdiction. You picked the wrong fax number.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really what we're talking about here, right? You picked the wrong fax number. Should have been Tangipahoa, but instead, they did what you would expect them to do. They fought it all the way up. Right, they're going to take a pritz all the way up because what else? They have no other
choice.
What
else are they going to do?
What else are you going to do? Yeah. Right, you fall on your sword or you take it all the way up. Take it all the way up. They say, nope, too bad, so sad. There's a few things here. One, that's why you don't file on the eve of prescription.
Always, right? Yes, but some people
but
do.
Sometimes you do. Like we've had to do it. We got hired by a lawyer in New York that's like, hey, I got this case I've been trying to settle, and they won't settle it. I need a Louisiana lawyer to take it over. So I was like, okay, when's it prescribed? They're like, tomorrow. Now ordinarily we would be like, what? Get out of here. But some months, maybe your intake's a little bit lower than other months. And I remember my partner, Bill Lorre.
Well, consider your referral source. Right. Yeah, if you have a relationship.
Bill and I are sitting there, and we're looking at each other, and we're like, we know we shouldn't do this. But let's just do it anyways. You know, it's in New Orleans. It'll take 5 minutes. Just go ahead and draft a petition. And I was like, let's do it. Right? And we did. And
how did the case work out for you?
Great result for the client.
Oh, great.
Great result for the client. But, you know, had we made a mistake, we'd really been in a pickle.
I have one right now where it's a legal malpractice. And then they hired another lawyer, and so then it was a legal malpractice. So we've got like a double layer. We've got like a legal malpractice against an initial lawyer, and then a legal malpractice against the second layer.
So I have rules on my legal malpractice cases. I will never do it for a criminal case. I'll never do it for a domestic case.
Yeah.
And I typically don't ever want to do it when there's more than one lawyer involved, where it's like, this lawyer made a mistake, you fired him, and then you hired this lawyer, and then you want to sue this one too. And I usually am like, gloss him.
Get around that rule. But like, I tell my clients, look out for your red flags in your own clients, right? Because like, the red flag clients are ones you're going to want to make sure you document your file really good, you maintain all of that good, clear communication so that there's not room for a miscommunication.
Right.
A person who has gone through multiple lawyers and is still upset is
a red flag.
Yeah, and they'll still need a lawyer. They'll probably still find a lawyer, but that is someone that you need to, it's a red flag.
It is. And, we see it all the time. We see it all the time. We'll sit down, we'll talk about the case. And we actually had this conversation last week. I was like, well, who was their attorney? It was so-and-so. I was like, well, he's a pretty good lawyer. You know, how long did he have the case? And he had the case for 5 years. I was like, he had the case for 5 years?
What kind of case
It's a trucking case, I think. You know, how much money is out? And he's like, they spent $110,000 prosecuting this case.
Hmm.
I was like, you are telling me that they got this ready for trial. They spent $110,000. And then the client fired them and wants to hire another lawyer. I was like, this is going to be a disaster.
Yeah, red flag.
You should tell him to go back to that lawyer and ask that lawyer if he would kindly take their case back. I was like, this is nuts. And also, by the way, there's absolutely nothing you're going to be able to do for this client to make them happy, and you're never going to get paid to do it because that lawyer's going to be fighting tooth and nail. But I thought, you know, but so that's that. I mean, but sometimes the rules can just be very draconian. So in the instance of the wrong parish, I mean, you should be able to fix that. That should be a curable offense. The insurance company hasn't been prejudiced by this at all, and they had notice of the whole thing, right? Or I'm thinking
well,
of another case.
Well, that's not so much an ethics rule. That's like your civil procedure rule,
right? That's
right?
Just like if your basic, yeah. Like, you know, yeah, like, you know, malpractice. We have one where the lawyer never responded to discovery to the point where the judge dismissed the case. I'm like, that's just nuts. I'm like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, okay, but
that really does skirt both, you know, both lines. And so the client then calls us and is like, well, he told me my case is going on. Can you look into it? And so we look into it. And I was like, yeah, your case was actually dismissed last week. And we told her, like, you should go report him to the bar, you know? And she didn't. I think they dismissed it, oddly enough.
Really?
I know. I was like, weird. Okay. And so I said, well, look, it's fresh. So we had one of the guys here jump on it. I said, look, go ahead and roll. File a motion for reconsideration. Because really dismissing a litigant's case for something as absurd as that.
Well, and that's the lawyer's conduct,
right?
Right. That's
it's
like
not their
really
conduct. The judge denied the motion for reconsideration. I was really surprised. I really thought, I was like, we'll get it reconsidered. We'll immediately get whatever and we know the defense lawyer. I was like, look, call Jack. Tell him whatever he needs. We'll get it to him. And I mean, like, tomorrow, right? Like, not whenever, you know. Like, and the judge said no. So, and then, you know, we took that up to the Fifth Circuit, and they said no. And so I was like, okay, well, it is what it is. And then it became a legal malpractice case. I felt really bad because I was like, you know, I don't actually agree with any of this. I understand, but I don't agree with it.
Well, you should hold the line in the sand there.
You know,
yeah,
but we got our legal malpractice judgment yesterday. Actually,
oh well, that's great.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's we definitely do some legal malpractice.
Yeah.
I don't have as many of those. You know, my big doc, I call it a docket, but my day to day is
your ethics.
My day to day is ethics. My day to day
mitigating. And so when you come in at the beginning of the year, like, what's your one big tip? So you said you do end of year and beginning of year. What's your one? We're still in the beginning of the year. What do I need to do this year?
Oh yeah. Okay. The first thing
keep my
is
nose clean.
Yeah, you need to know who your clients are and how many clients you have. Okay, you need to make sure you have engagement agreements with everybody. Well, you're going to have them. You do PI, right? That's the one type of representation you've got to have a written fee agreement with.
Right.
But an hourly case, a flat fee, you don't have to get it in writing. You should. There is no reason to not have an engagement agreement in writing.
Everything has to be in writing. If I go into a file and I see that it's missing, I go nuts. Everybody knows, like, that is not okay. We have a folder called intake. Everything's in there. And in fact, when I say everything's in there, I mean, like, I will have in there, because of mine, I advertise. I'm an advertising lawyer. So I can tell, like,
tell how they came in.
And I can tell what you searched to find me. Right?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're like the...
Do you do keyword advertising? I'm not going to ask you to...
No, it's fine. I mean, digital advertising. And so I can... So, like, maybe it was Monday or something like that. When, you know, a thing came through. It looked like an employment case. And it was a form. Someone goes to the website. They're chatting with, you know, it's not a bot, but it just assumed because they talk like a bot. But they're chatting with the non-bot on the website. And then we get a little form lead, you know, and we'll look at it and say, you should go call this person. But it looks like employment work. We don't really do a lot of employment work anymore. I'll usually refer it out. I don't even, you know, just for free. Like, I'm not looking to monetize it. But I said, but this person searched, you know, work injury attorney. You need to call this guy. You know, don't just think. I mean, and so a lot of times we'll see, like, workers' comp stuff come through. They originally are looking for a lawyer because they got fired. But as you continue to talk to them, you're like, well, wait a minute. You got fired because you
got
hit
hurt
by a forklift while you were working and it wasn't your fault, or it was your fault. It didn't even matter. Well, I don't think you have a great wrongful termination case. I mean, you can. I don't want it. But I'll take your comp, Clays. Yeah. You know, we'll help you out there. So, you know, yeah. So they advertise. So I can, all of that stuff's in there.
Well,
I'll take the phone call. I'll record all the calls are recorded. I'll put that in there. I want to know exactly how you came to us. I want the entire conversation. The whole thing's in there.
Yeah.
And then for my own, you know, so my records, you know, I'll know how did they find us? What did they do? But for your purposes as well. You know?
Well, I would say you're a lot more diligent than a lot of lawyers out there. So if you're talking about how to get ready for the beginning of the year, be diligent and be detail oriented, right? So figure out who your clients are, figure out how many cases you have, and make sure you've got the capacity to handle that. So that, so you don't get underwater.
Yeah.
When you get underwater, that's where you make the mistakes.
I agree with that.
That's where you panic. You don't know where to go. So you're just not going to deal with that case that you made a mistake on. You're going to let it collect dust in the corner of the office. You're going to tell the client that, oh, you know, you confused your cases. You told the client we're in discovery when actually that never happened. Oh, well, now you realize you can kind of just keep the client going. Well, then there you're writing your malpractice plus.
Right.
So,
and avoiding the problem, right? We all have conflict avoidance.
Right. Everybody's got the case they don't want to deal with.
Right.
But you just can't.
It makes it so much worse.
Yeah,
it really does.
So stay on top of it, right? So you know your clients, you know what cases you have, you know you have the capacity. So set your reminders. Like, I don't know how you guys, what case software do you use?
We use Spavine.
Okay, we use Clio.
Okay.
So,
very similar. I can set reminders. I can task people.
Yeah.
It saves it in the feed. We have a notes feed, so you can go in
we
there.
We have that. Yeah. We use Clio. Task everything. And Every case that we've got open has a 30-day check-in with the client. Now, sometimes that becomes unnecessary. So it's like, oh, well, you know, I ended up talking to them yesterday. I don't need to check in 30 days from now. But it keeps showing up so that I remember that case.
Right, like you need call Bill. Right.
Yeah.
So, well, here, I got this thing.
Oh, what is that? What does that mean?
Means we went on too long. We went on too long.
We're out of time?
That's it.
I feel so cheated.
I know. The reel, I can see there's like a reel in the back, like flop, 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 flop. Like we're out of time. I really appreciate you coming.
This was fun.
Thank you so much. Claire Rubion, Louisiana Legal Ethics. If you have done something unethical, no, I'm kidding. how about this? If you're unsure of that your process is the most efficient and ethical manner, call Claire or email her. But tell them how to contact you.
You can call me 337-258-0101. You can email me, Claire Rubion, CLARERUBION at LA Legal Ethics. Or you can Google me and we have an intake form.
There you go.
I say if you're worried about something or you're just wondering.
I reach out to her all the time where I'll be like, hey, is this kosher? And, you know, and I agree. It gives me peace of mind. And then I can go back to my guys because my guys are always like, are we doing it right? Are we doing it right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, calm down. And, you know, it's like, no, I talked to Claire and she says we're good. And it was like, oh, thank God.
Well, and sometimes you may know the right end result where you're trying to get and you just need to know how to get there.
Yeah.
And I got the steps on how to get there in a way that's compliant with the rules. Because you can get there other ways.
No, there's a lot of rules.
You can get there another way, but you got to follow the right steps.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be done right 100% of the time. So thanks so much.
So we're around.
For
yeah, thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me today on Above the Legal Limit. If you enjoyed the show and you want to hear more about business and law, hit that subscribe button. If you didn't like the show, keep it to yourself. Remember, there's no limit to what we can achieve. We will see you next week. Until then, even though we're above the legal limit, let's drive safely. Cheers, everyone.